This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
New phase for the Supreme Court debate. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. On this Friday, March 18, welcome aboard. Here's what's up this hour.
The argument about whether to fill a Supreme Court vacancy is changing locations as senators leave Washington to go home to hear from constituents.
Finger-pointing, blame, and apologies during a tense hearing on Capitol Hill about the lead water crisis in Flint, Michigan.
Some still argue that a number 16 seed is due to knock off a number 1 in the NCAA tournament. It's never happened, but Holy Cross gets a shot at Oregon today.
And as we enter day two, we'll look at the best nicknames of college basketball players in this year's tourney.
These are players' nicknames, and these are the names that they go by, you know, almost formally. Scoochie Smith, his real name is Deshaun, but he's gone by Scoochie since he was in grade school. So, Yogi Ferrell, the same thing. So a lot of these names, they're what they're known as and what they go by, and you'll be hearing a lot of them throughout the week.
I'm not sure there's a better one than Scoochie. Zach Schoenbrunn, writing for the New York Times, has a list of the unique nicknames that some players go by. He's here in about 20 minutes. Lawmakers from both parties are taking their positions and staking them with regards to the Supreme Court debate that's happening right now. In fact, the debate over filling the vacancy is moving to a new location. Instead of rhetoric on Capitol Hill, members of Congress head home today for a two-week recess and will face questions from voters about whether to hold confirmation hearings for Appellate Judge Merrick Garland. Senate Republicans argue that President Obama should not be making appointments to the court during his final year in office. Meanwhile, White House spokesman Josh Earnest says he's still hopeful for a confirmation hearing.
I do have confidence. I mean, I'm not going to stand up here and make predictions about sort of what the percentage is, but there's no doubt that he deserves fair consideration. And if given fair consideration, he will be confirmed.
The issue had already found its way into Senate races across the country, with Democrats arguing that Senate Republicans are shirking their duties, and the GOP saying their refusal to hold hearings and vote on a nominee this year gives the American people a say through the coming elections. The court vacancy was created last month by the death of conservative Justice Antonin Scalia. Meanwhile, we're expected to also see senators talk about the substantive matters raised in the nomination in areas like gun rights and the health law, issues that rally core voters on both sides. Lawmakers from both parties have called on the leading officials at the Federal Environmental Protection Agency and the state of Michigan to resign over their roles in the lead-tainted water crisis in Flint, Michigan. On Capitol Hill yesterday, during the third hearing over the issue, Republicans began calling for EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy's head, and Democrats shot back that Michigan's Governor Rick Snyder should resign. Both have apologized for reacting too slowly.
This isn't about politics nor partisanship. I'm not going to point fingers or shift blame. There's plenty of that to share, and neither will help the people of Flint.
Flint's drinking water became contaminated after the city began using the Flint River as a source in April 2014 and failed to use a chemical to control corrosion of aging pipes, allowing lead to leach into drinking water. Congressman Jason Chaffetz of Utah, chairman of yesterday's committee, had some of the harshest words, questioning the need for the EPA, since it had the authority to do something.
You had that under the law, and you didn't do it.
No, sir, I did not have that under the law.
Yes, you did. If
I
there is an imminent
authority,
threat, if
I,
there is an imminent threat, you can pull that switch.
Only
and you finally
if we
did in
also,
January. Administrator, you are wrong.
He criticized Ms. McCarthy for waiting until January to take direct action in Flint and for not visiting the city until February. President Obama has reportedly told a group of Democratic donors that Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont was nearing the point at which his campaign against Hillary Clinton for the Democratic presidential nomination would end, and that the party must soon come together to back her. The New York Times says Mr. Obama acknowledged that Mrs. Clinton was perceived to have weaknesses as a candidate and that some Democrats did not view her as authentic. That's not stopping Mr. Sanders, who held a rally in Flagstaff, Arizona.
We're heading further in a couple of months to California and to Washington State, to Oregon. We think that the climate is a little bit friendlier for us.
The Times says Mr. Obama chose his words carefully and did not explicitly call on Mr. Sanders to quit the race, although those in attendance took his comments as a signal to Mr. Sanders that perpetuating his campaign could only help the Republicans recapture the White House. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on this morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Next up on the presidential primary calendar, Arizona, a potential swing state that has emerged as the epicenter of the battle over illegal immigration in the U.S. Arizona will host both Republican and Democratic primary elections this coming Tuesday, the last Republican primary date until early April. On the same day, voters in Utah will vote in Republican and Democratic primaries, and Democrats in Idaho will attend caucuses. More from Wall Street Journal reporter Byron Tao. Byron, what about Arizona?
Well, Arizona's really been the sort of flashpoint for the immigration debate in the United States. A few years ago, the state became sort of famous or infamous for passing SB 1070, which was a very strict crackdown on illegal immigration. It let state authorities start to enforce federal immigration law. And it's just generally been an issue for the population in that state for a variety of reasons, including the fact that the legal Hispanic population is surging, as well as the fact that, you know, the people in that state deal with a lot of border issues and a lot of human migration that pass through their state. So it really is just a major political issue there, and it's likely to dominate the debate in both parties.
All right, so who's saying what at this point in terms of Arizona's immigration?
So the Republican and Democratic parties are in totally different places on this issue, almost to the point where there's not really a middle ground left. You know, you have Donald Trump, who's the leading Republican contender. He's called for building a border wall along the entire U.S.-Mexican border. He's called for the deportation of all 11 or 12 million illegal immigrants currently in the United States. And a lot of his Republican rivals have said something similar, if not endorsed essentially those proposals. At least they've endorsed large-scale deportations and enhanced border security. On the other side of the issue, we saw Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders both essentially promised to end almost all deportations unless you know, folks have criminal records or are dangerous, and they've called for a pathway to citizenship. They've called for more legal immigration, and you know, the two parties couldn't be further apart on this issue, and they're playing to their respective bases.
So how do those policies play in Arizona, or does it depend on the community? Does the legal immigrant population feel one way, and
So it's a good question. So essentially, it breaks down along partisan lines here. So the Republican primary tends to be a lot whiter than the Republican primary, and a lot of white voters have just more skepticism towards illegal immigration and towards and are more pro-border security, and that's just sort of how it is. And that's not to say there aren't lots of legal immigrants in the United States that generally believe that there should be border security and legal immigration and perhaps deportations for some of the folks here illegally. But in the Republican primary, the Republican base is definitely much more in favor of the kind of policies Donald Trump has espoused. And in the Democratic primary, you know, there's a lot of activists that believe that, you know, that it's a humanitarian crisis, that we should offer folks a pathway to citizenship, that a lot of the illegal immigrants have been here for a long time, have set down roots and contribute to our society. And the pressure there in the Democratic Party is to be as expansive and as generous as possible in an immigration policy. So the same issue plays in very different ways in both party primaries.
You point out, too, that Utah and Idaho will have primaries as well on Tuesday, and immigration's a fairly big deal there as well?
To some extent, in Utah, there are similar issues, but those two states are very different demographically than Arizona. But yeah, those states will play, you know, immigration is a national issue at this point, and Donald Trump really did rise to the top of the Republican field based on his sort of bombastic pronouncements and his policy stances on immigration that have really resonated with a lot of Republican voters. And so, you know, I expect this is something that will continue to propel him in states no matter where he's competing.
He's also, going back to Arizona for a minute, I mean, he's picked up some decent endorsements, right?
Definitely. So he's been endorsed by Jan Brewer, who's the former governor. She's very popular among conservatives. She was the one who signed that SB 1070 bill into law back a few years ago. And he's also been endorsed by Joe Arpaio, who has become a national figure for his stance on being sort of tough on crime and tough on illegal immigration. He's the Maricopa County Sheriff and sort of a national figure and outspoken on the issue. And he's lended his endorsement to Donald Trump as well.
Thanks, Byron. Wall Street Journal reporter Byron Tao. 21 minutes after the hour on this morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Ford and first, fiery rhetoric about joint military drills between the U.S. and South Korea, and now North Korea has fired off a ballistic missile as well. The missile flew about 500 miles off the coast into the sea. The Pentagon has confirmed that the missile was fired from a mobile launcher. Hillary Clinton has been declared the winner of the Missouri primary, locking Bernie Sanders out of any victories in the states who voted in primaries Tuesday. The victory does little to change the delegate count in the Democratic race. Sanders campaigned last night in Flagstaff, Arizona.
We're heading further in a couple of months to California and to Washington State, to Oregon. We think that the climate is a little bit friendlier for us.
Meanwhile, President Obama reportedly told a group of Democratic donors last Friday that Sanders is nearing an end point and the party must soon come together to back Clinton. An electrician who plunged to his death while working on a Los Angeles skyscraper was not supposed to be above the third floor and had removed his hard hat before falling 53 floors. Building management CEO Chris Martin says the upper floors have safety barriers.
There are barricades around the exterior of the building prevent any worker from approaching an edge condition.
The man who was in his second day on the project fell from the unfinished Wilshire Grand Center around noon yesterday. Once finished, the building will be the tallest in the West. According to a new report from Safe Kids Worldwide, about 160 children go to a hospital emergency room every day as a result of accidental medicine overdoses. 60,000 young children were seen in ERs in 2013 after ingesting pain relievers, prescription drugs, or vitamins that adults left either on the ground, in cabinets, in pill organizers, in a purse or diaper bag, or on countertops where children were able to reach the medication. And radar scans of King Tut's tomb have revealed two spaces in the north and east chambers of the mausoleum that could contain the discovery of the century. Egypt's antiquities minister says metal and organic masses were revealed by the scan, signaling that the rooms could possibly contain funerary objects.
How about that? My daughter just started learning some of this stuff in sixth grade.
Yeah.
You know, about the history of ancient Egypt and how they developed writing and communication and all of those stuff.
It
was pretty neat, I must say. I did not learn that. I had horrible, horrible history classes growing up.
Oh, my mother was a history teacher. I learned all that stuff.
Oh, jeez. I would have never survived in your house. 23 minutes now after the hour. The new high-performance Dell Latitude systems are the most secure, manageable, and reliable business-class laptops and two-in-ones so employees can do their best work. Outfitted with the latest Intel Core processors, your team can reduce downtime by 50% and boost productivity with 4 times the performance. Make your work beautiful again at Dell.com/radio. Again, Dell.com/radio. Hey, glad you're with us. One of the fun things about sports, nicknames, especially in this year's NCAA basketball tournament. More from Zach Schoenbrunn, contributing reporter to the New York Times. Zach, what you got?
These are players' nicknames, and these are the names that they go by, almost formally. Scoochie Smith, his real name is Deshaun, but he's gone by Scoochie since he was in grade school. So, Yogi Ferrell, the same thing. So a lot of these names, they're what they're known as and what they go by, and you'll be hearing a lot of them throughout the week.
Wow. So what are the origins of Scoochie, do we know?
Scoochie doesn't even know the origins of Scoochie. he claims that his grandfather gave it to him when he was just a baby. I think it was probably just sort of baby babble, Scoochie, and it turned into a lasting name.
How about Yogi Ferrell?
Yeah, Yogi was a fan of the cartoon character Yogi Bear as a child. So his parents dubbed him Yogi, I think, when he was around the age of 5 or so, and it's just stuck.
That's funny. We're speaking with Zach Schoenbrunn, contributing reporter to the New York Times. He's got a great piece called What's in a Nickname? Ask Scoochie, Yogi, or Tubby, talking about the players' nicknames that you'll hear in the NCAA tournament. And what other ones did you find?
There's a Giddy playing for Middle Tennessee State, Giddy Potts. I think just, you know, he was just a fun-loving kid. There's a Tum-Tum, who actually has one of the more interesting given names in the tournament. His given name is Lou Rawls. Just like the like the singer,
no
that's
way.
One name, Lou Rawls, and just in case his name wasn't distinctive enough, his parents gave him a nickname, Tum-Tum, off of the character from the movie Three Ninjas.
Right.
And you know, there are a few more. There's Tubby Smith, who's the coach of Texas Tech. He's been a longtime coach. There's a Pooh Williamson, who's another coach at Texas Tech, and there's a Book Richardson. Who's an assistant for Arizona. So a lot of great names.
Book, huh? Book Richardson, is that what you said?
That's right, Book, B-O-O-K.
Wow.
Nick originally named Pocketbook from his grandmother, caught him rifling through her pocketbook as a kid and eventually got shortened. That wouldn't last very long on the basketball court, so eventually he got shortened to Book when he was a player, and it's like I said, it's stuck ever since.
Thanks, Zach. Zach Schoenbrunn, contributing reporter to the New York Times. He also mentions Pete Gillen, the former coach at Xavier, Providence, and Virginia, who was on CBS late Sunday night talking about former nicknames from his schoolyard playing days. He remembers names like Batman, Bullhead, Sid, Shorty, Joey Roast Beef, Joey Clams, and Three Finger Willie. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us on this Friday, March 18. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. Heated exchanges during testimony about the water crisis in Flint, Michigan. The Dow Industrials have turned positive for the year. More on that story in just a moment. The first Samsung Galaxy tablet to run Windows goes on sale today. 50th anniversary of the Slurpee today. $1.50 if you bring your own cup to a 7-Eleven. Arizona woman settles for $125,000 after she was arrested in her home while naked. Day two of the NCAA tournament today, and some still make the case that a 16 seed is due for a win. That pressure falls to Holy Cross this afternoon. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, don't look now, but the Dow Jones Industrial Average has turned positive for the year. In addition, U.S. crude oil settled above $40 a barrel, rebounding after a rough start to the year. Some investors said concerns from earlier this year about slowing global growth and the path of interest rates have eased. That said, Ben White at Politico says another concern has yet to ease, and that's the notion that no one can figure out the 2016 election. Ben, how so?
Well, markets in Wall Street have become very volatile over the last few months, and the 2016 campaign and its craziness and unpredictability are certainly a big part of that, and Donald Trump is a big part of the unpredictability. It's not the only thing roiling markets. You've obviously got questions about the U.S. economy. You've got the Fed. You've got China. There's lots of stuff there. But markets do not like political uncertainty, and they don't know what would happen if Trump got the nomination and if he conceivably won the White House in the fall. He's campaigned very heavily against free trade, says he wants to deport 11 million immigrants in 1 year. And he's been a fairly divisive figure. So Wall Street wonders if he's president, what do his policies actually look like? What do they mean for the economy and markets? And it's on the left as well. There's concern over Bernie Sanders driving Hillary Clinton to the left on trade and some other issues. So markets really don't know what to make of the 2016 campaign. They don't know what's going to happen ultimately. And that's the thing that markets like the least is uncertainty. And boy, we've got plenty of it right now.
Wow. All right. So is this standard every 4 years or 8 years during a presidential election?
It's not really standard. No, this would be unusual by election standards. In 2012, you had Obama favored for re-election over Mitt Romney, so the markets were not terribly concerned about the outcome. And Mitt Romney was a fairly traditional Republican candidate. He was pro-free trade, a little bit more moderate on immigration, and people on Wall Street knew who he was, knew what he stood for, and they supported him pretty heavily, as they often do for Republicans. But the alternative to that was 4 more years of President Obama, which was a known quantity. So it was not a situation where there was complete uncertainty over the outcome and over the policies of who might win. This is pretty unique. It's There's been political uncertainty in other election cycles, but I don't think anything like what we see right now.
How about that? Wow, we're speaking with Ben White, chief economics correspondent at Politico. His piece is called How Trump is Roiling Markets. You've got one paragraph in your piece, or one line, says some traders and executives wonder if the Texas Senator Ted Cruz might be scarier than Trump. How so? What do they mean?
Right. Well, they're worried that Cruz, who has a reputation for not really getting along with people in Washington, he's not widely liked within his own party. And the concern there is, if he becomes president, how does he get through legislation if he doesn't have a lot of good feelings about him in Congress? What Wall Street wants to see in the next administration is some type of corporate tax reform that would make the U.S. more competitive globally. They'd like to see immigration reform, entitlement reform, some debt and deficit reduction long term. And the concern with Cruz is he's such a divisive figure in the party. Does he have any support in Congress to get any of this stuff done? They'd like to see a candidate elected who can stop the gridlock in Washington, get away from debt limit crises that we've seen in the past, to get away from shutting the government down. Cruz has been behind a lot of those things when he was in Congress. So there's not a whole lot of enthusiasm for him as president among people who care about Washington working well and getting some stuff done. So that's why you see, if it's not Trump, then do we really want Cruz? Which gets you to the point of Wall Street perhaps just kind of settling for Hillary Clinton.
All right, so they feel that Mrs. Clinton would be, what, the safest slash most predictable?
Yeah, that's exactly right. She obviously has deep relationships in the financial industry, something that's hurt her in the primary process because liberal Democrats don't particularly like that. But she's a known quantity. She was the senator from New York. She's got a history of relatively moderate stances on a lot of issues that Wall Street cares about. And they think they could have a pretty good idea of what her presidency would look like. It wouldn't be surprising the way, say, a Sanders presidency would be or a Trump presidency would be.
It's interesting, right? Ben White at Politico. 20 minutes now before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Coming up next, what's been trending the most on Google? When you're trying to create demand, you need a cost-effective way to reach your target audience and generate qualified leads for your sales team. My recommendation is to use Citrix GoToWebinar. With GoToWebinar, you can present to hundreds with confidence. Whether you're a startup or a company operating worldwide, GoToWebinar can help you connect, captivate, and convert your target audience. It's easy to do. First, pick a compelling topic, select your audience, and schedule your event. With automated emails, custom branding, and practice sessions, GoToWebinar makes getting ready easy. When your event is live, keep attendees engaged with interactive polls, live chat, and respond to feedback in real time. Once your event is over, you're only a click away from reporting on registration attendance and performance metrics of your event. GoToWebinar enables marketers like you to easily reach your target audience and turn leads into customers. Get started with GoToWebinar today to connect and convert. Visit GoToWebinar.com to start your free 30-day trial. That's GoToWebinar.com.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Time now for a technology update, and it's brought to you by Dell. Make your work beautiful again and reduce downtime by 50% with powerful new Dell and Intel technology. Learn more at Dell.com/business. Time now for our weekly look at what we've been searching for the most online. We're joined now live by Google Trends expert Nina Tyler. Morning, Nina. Where do we start?
Hi, good morning. Well, it was a big week in sports and politics, so we have a really great roundup. We're going to start with Appellate Court Judge Merrick Garland. As you know, President Obama nominated him as the nation's 113th Supreme Court Justice to potentially replace the late Justice Scalia. And so we saw people coming to Google to look for, you know, some of the more interesting questions, which were, you know, is Merrick Garland Jewish? Is he a Republican or a Democrat? And also, how liberal is Merrick Garland? These were some of the questions that we saw people wanting clarity around.
Very good. So you mentioned sports, right? March Madness, a lot of searches regarding that.
March Madness, if you're a college basketball fan, this is the time of year you wait for. So March Madness kicked off this week, and fans, they were searching for everything to help build their perfect bracket. It's a really competitive time, you know, if you're in an office bracket or just a bracket with your friends. But, you know, fans, they can find all of the game times and more, you know, through the Google search app, which is great. But people were searching for coaches, you know, Coach K. He was the most searched coach during the NCAA season.
Do you got a bracket filled out?
You know what? I'm in the process of filling out my bracket. I am always a little late to the party.
Yeah, a little late. It was only 16 games yesterday. But if you're clever, just fill out don't fill out all the correct ones. You gotta miss like one or two, then submit it.
Exactly. And then, it was on my to-do list yesterday, and
yeah.
I missed it.
See? There you go. But that'd be a way to just kind of sneak your way in. Just pick a couple wrong from yesterday.
Do you have a bracket?
Yeah, oh, yes, but it's already just destroyed from day. I was wrong so many times, I lost count yesterday. So,
It's
not even worth it. We're speaking live this morning with Google Trends expert Nina Tyler. All right, so Mother Teresa, too, on a lot of people's minds.
Mother Teresa on a lot of people's minds. And actually, you know, it's interesting because Pope Francis, he declared her a saint, you know, 19 years after her passing. And you would think that everyone would be happy about this, you know, because Mother Teresa, she dedicated her life to the poor. But there's actually been a little bit of controversy about Mother Teresa becoming a saint. You know, people have come out and they said that, you know, she spouted dangerous and hateful rhetoric during her life and accepted millions of dollars in donations from questionable characters. And so there's, you know, there are a lot of people who are happy with the news, but a lot of people who aren't so happy.
All right, let's finish up talking about this video that's making the rounds as popular this week. This soldier coming home, the dog's reaction. But this one, why is this one so popular? This doesn't strike me. I like there are a lot better soldier coming home reunites with animal videos out there than this one. What's going on? We just have a lack of good videos this week?
You know what? There's just something about the heartwarming dog video, soldier video that everyone tends to love, and there really is no kind of formula for what makes a video go viral. So this one shows an elderly dog kind of embracing his human who returns home from military training camp, and people have just gone crazy for it. You know, we've seen it on different morning shows and just, you know, being shared, you know, on social media. So people have gravitated toward it for its heartwarming qualities, and it has more than 3 million views.
Wow, that's an impressive number for sure. I just felt like, you know, there's one of like a dog comes charging out the front door of the home and, you know, tackles the soldier. And this one, I don't know why it made it, but maybe because the dog's a little gray around the muzzle. I don't know. Thanks, Nina. Nina Tyler, Google Trends expert. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Court and lawmakers from both parties called on the top officials at the EPA and state of Michigan to resign over their respective roles in the lead-tainted water crisis in Flint. Republicans like Utah's Jason Chaffetz began by calling for EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy's resignation.
That's up to the people of Michigan to deal with that. The jurisdiction that I have, that we have, is on the federal government. And that's why I think it's time for the EPA Administrator. If she's going to do the quote-unquote courageous thing, I think it is time for her to step away.
Democrats shot back that Michigan's GOP Governor Rick Snyder should resign. Merrick Garland has begun going through the motions of a Supreme Court nominee by paying courtesy calls on senators. White House spokesman Josh Earnest says Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Charles Grassley has spoken to Garland by phone.
Senator Grassley's staff indicated to the White House that they'd be prepared to schedule a meeting after the two-week recess that the Senate will be getting at the end of this week.
But Senate Republicans declared the Capitol visits pointless, given their resolve to prevent President Obama from making the appointment. A suspicious piece of mail containing white powder was sent to Eric Trump's New York City apartment. The letter's been removed and is being examined by law enforcement authorities. No one was injured. Eric is the 32-year-old son of Donald Trump. Earth got so hot last month that scientists are struggling to find words, describing temperatures as astronomical, staggering, and strange. This was not just another month of global heat records triggered by El Nino and man-made global warming. NOAA says February obliterated old marks by such a margin that it was the most above-normal month since meteorologists started keeping track in 1880. Just how much money is riding on March Madness? According to the American Gaming Association, we're wagering more than $9 billion on the NCAA tournament. To put that in perspective, that's about $1.30 for every person in the world, $38 for every adult in the U.S., and close to the GDP of several small nations such as Haiti.
Wow. Now, if I was a betting man, I wouldn't have made some of the picks that I bet for this tournament.
Oh, a quick turnaround
right?
in 24 hours.
How do you like that little spin right there? Like that spin? I'm so unhappy that Baylor. Oh, you got to be kidding me, Bears. 6 minutes now. Jennifer goes 14-2 on day one. I'm just cheering against you now. I hope you reverse it. Just go 2-14 today.
I did pick Purdue to win a few more, so you got that on me.
All right. 6 minutes in front of the hour. Here's another argument for choosing a number 16 seed in the NCAA tournament to beat a number one. A journal story we did yesterday says because this is the weakest field of top seeds, this is the year to do it. But all top seeds, three of them that played yesterday, were winners. In the history of the tournament, now number 16 seeds have lost all 127 games. But 538.com says his hunch is that number 16 seeds have been unlucky so far. 15 seeds have beaten number twos 7 times. Number 14s have beaten number 3s 20 times. Results suggest 16 versus 1 upsets ought to be possible. Says sometimes a team gets seeded as a 16 when it should probably have been a 14 or 15. And sometimes a number 1 should have been a number 2. If a 15 can beat a 2, then surely a 15 seed that's misseeded as a 16 can beat a 2 that's misseeded as a number 1. Good luck today. Number 16 Holy Cross, which faces number 1 seed Oregon tonight. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.